Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chatting Between Takes. I am your host, Sean Benson. You know, I thought I'd peel off a little half-hour car cast. The last podcast, we got a lot of great response from, and me and Katie Boland, we're playing a lot of phone tag to do this podcast because we're both super busy right now, especially with TIFF coming up. So she's going to be our guest after TIFF. But I'm pretty excited because right now I'm in the car, the Porsche. By the way, I was chatting with a friend of mine about comedians stealing content, right? So there's a big thing online because the Fat Jewish, which is an Instagram account, the guy was getting in shit because, you know, he's getting lots, like he's got like 6 million followers and his stuff's like awesome. But he's not writing any of it. It's these, you know, Instagram memes, basically. And they're pretty good jokes. And I guess he wasn't crediting people. And so a bunch of other comedians are like, this guy's a scourge. It's funny because the bad press he got for being a scourge made me follow him. I guess there really is no bad press. So anyways, Bill Burr, whenever I do that upward inflection, Porsche, I'm stealing that from Bill Burr. I don't know if crediting it makes it okay, but I know that because I think Bill Burr's hilarious and I listen to him a lot and his stand-up's fantastic. I prefer his stand-up to his podcast because I think he's really tight with his jokes. Anyways, it's almost like, you know, when everybody's going, what was the thing like 15 years ago? Where it's like, what's up? You just start doing it. You're not doing it on purpose. You're just doing it because it's part of the cultural thing. So anyways, we're driving in the Porsche. I am going to my new job. Now this job, okay, this is a big thing. This job is that I've been asked to be an assistant instructor at Sheridan for photography. I got a phone call yesterday from one of my photo mentors, Peter Andrew Lustig, who's been a guest on the show, DP'd our film Barn Wedding. And he said, listen, I got hung up by one of the TAs and I've gotten, you know, permission to have you in as my instructor. And would you be okay with that? I'm like, okay with it. You know, I told him a couple dates where I wasn't going to be around, but yes. Are you kidding me? You know, I just came from a photo shoot. I was doing some headshots with the phenomenal Thomas Michael, actor, producer. If you haven't seen Backcountry, he's the producer on that. Go see it. It's really, really well done. Adam McDonald's first directorial feature. Just great stuff, you know, and I chatted with these guys a lot while making Barn Wedding. So great guys, friends of mine, and super talented. And, you know, we're at that age now where we're kind of like doing stuff instead of waiting to be a part of stuff other people are doing. And it's a nice feeling. Sometimes lifting the weight sucks, you know. There's no movie unless I go make it, which isn't true. I mean, I'll be in another movie, but the ones I want to make. But that's the point. I'm eating a bit of a nut bar, guys, because I'm in a bit of a rush. That's the point, is that if it's the movie I want to make and no one else is making it, then guess what? I get to go make it. That's how anything good's invented. So the thing for me with this photography, I don't know if I've told this story on the podcast, but I'm going to retell it if I have. I was broke. Now, when I say broke, I mean actually broke. Like the guys in my band, Kobe or Phil, they'd give me 10 bucks here and there for groceries. I was living in LA. I kicked the booze and drugs, but my career that I destroyed with the booze and drugs hadn't begun yet. Now, a number of people had been asking me to take their picture because I'd always been a hobby photographer. And when people were over, I'd take a photo of them and they'd like them. Often more than the ones they were spending 800 bucks for. So it was actually Kobe who one day goes, dude, I want you to take my headshot. And I immediately had a feeling of, I don't know how to do that. And I especially don't know how to do it on film. So I said, no, I don't really know how to do that. Now, about a month later, I went down to Sammy's Camera on Fairfax. And I was dropping off a roll of film. And this thing was going to cost me, like, by the time I got prints, I'm making up the number, but we'll say 26 bucks. I could barely buy groceries. And I was desperate. At this point, I think I'd just gotten a residual. So I had 700 bucks in the bank. Anyways, I go upstairs and I say to the digital camera department guy, how much would your cheapest digital camera that will still be headshot quality be? And I need it to, you know, have a sort of, it's called a narrow depth of field. I need it to have soft focus in the back, but very sharp focus on the eyes. And he goes, well, and I was expecting him to say like $1,500. So then what I was going to do was one of two things, right? Or both at the same time, actually. Let's be clear on this. And this is both specific and metaphorical. I was going to put it on my list, and it was also going to be another thing that things weren't going to be okay until I had. Man, if only I could have a camera, but they're $1,500. Now, you know I like to be a little instructive, even if I'm arrogant with it. What do you got going on in your life, people, that if only, then? And it might be, like, if only I went and got that piece of gear, then I could make the movie I want. Go get the fucking piece of gear. Seriously, just do it. Stop making excuses. I had been making enough excuses for years and years and years to the point where I couldn't buy goddamn groceries most of the time. For, you know, by the way, this was a short period. I don't want to make it sound like it was 5 years, but it was a real period, close to a year, and it was brutal. I'd max out my credit card, then I'd get a commercial residual that would pay just enough to pay the credit card and maybe an extra $100, and then the cycle of debt would continue. So, anyways, I'm expecting the guy to say $1,500 or so. He says $550 out the door. I said, what? And he goes, except the kit lens won't let you do that narrow depth of field you want. That's an extra $100 out the door. $700 to my name. $650 out the door. You better fucking believe I took it. Give a man a fish, teach a man to fish. That camera was my fishing rod. And this morning, I shot a respected actor producer, and I'm off to teach photography. By the way, this isn't a career shift, and this is something I really want to talk about after. It's called fucking living, man. The worst thing I ever did for myself was define myself to myself. By the way, especially because we can reinforce lies. I can go around telling myself what a great guy I am while standing you up. We don't know ourselves very well. I really believe that. So, the more I define myself to myself, the more I'm probably doing it to other people too, which probably makes me a bit of a blowhard and probably makes me more of a liar than if I just kept my mouth shut and behaved. How you behave will tell us everything we need to know about you. What you tell us about you, it will fool your lower companions, because if they're your lower companions, they probably want to be fooled. Maybe they want to be fooled because you have drugs. Oh yeah, you're a great guy. Mind if I take another bang off this pile of coke on your table? Oh yeah, you're a great guy. You're taking me out for dinner because you're rich, right? But to real, you know, good people, your behavior's all we need to know. Your words are fun, but they aren't who you are. So I had to stop talking about who I was and start being somebody with that photography. My point with this is, like, so this week, tomorrow I'm shooting Saving Hope in this lovely recurring role that started as 4 episodes and now is 7. Maybe 6, can't remember. Then, today I'm going to teach photography, spending the week at TIFF parties. Saturday, one of my karate students is going to go get graded to a brown belt. No one of these things is me. I'm just living. And that's, in fact, when high school, like, high school was a lot of fun for me. Yeah, I got picked on. Yeah, I've talked about that. But big picture, I was active, I was engaged, it was a great time. And a lot of the reason I got picked on is because I was indefinable. Like, it was weird to some people. Like, I think I've mentioned this, that the high school drama coach, when I auditioned for a play in grade 13, actually said to me, wow, you're really good. I thought you were just a dumb jock. Somehow, this guy got the impression that I was a jock. Maybe he didn't say dumb. that I was a jock when all the jocks thought I was a fag artsy ballerina. So, you know what I'm saying is, like, I was none of the above. And that for me is kind of where I refound joy in living when I was 32 and stopped drinking and doing drugs. By the way, the anniversary of which 8 years comes up next month. So that's a real key moment in my life. And this also blends for me with something interesting, which is I was chatting with my dad over the weekend. We had a real nice drive and he was in a good mood and I was in a good mood. And we were just talking about the idea of success. And, you know, he was saying how one of my brother's greatest successes is having such a beautiful relationship with his wife. And that a lot of the external material success that we all seek as young men is good, but it's not as important as a good home life. Whether you're dating guys, dating girls, or alone, by the way, having that good, healthy relationship when you're at home with whatever's there. And, you know, obviously I feel that way with Emily. And then we talked interestingly. I said, yeah, sometimes I really regret that I destroyed my career on the booze and drugs. And my dad goes, I don't look at it that way at all. Now, I always wish I could talk to my 25-year-old self. You know, part of me is like, God, I wish I could go back. That kid wouldn't listen. But I wish I could say, like, what you think is important isn't as important as you think. So I have to assume that's true for me now. I talked about this a few podcasts ago about the spirituality aspect. I'm on a spiritual journey. I'd be a fool to think where I am today is the destination. It's a trip. I'm on a trip. So I said to my dad, well, what do you mean? Thinking to myself, we're both speaking really clearly here, if you know what I mean. He's not burdened down with tales of my mom. I'm not burdened down with any financial or personal distress. So I feel like I'm getting advice from my future self here. He says, yeah, you were successful as an actor, but that's kind of all you were for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. And, you know, ultimately getting let go from that soap opera and the things that you did afterwards and are still doing, it's such a more interesting, fulfilling, and better life. I just think that was a really great thing that happened. And I looked at him and I said, God, it's nice to hear you say that, because I feel that way too. Not always, by the way. But again, that's a bit of what I'm talking about. I'm heading to go teach fucking photography. I hadn't shot a single professional photo until 6, 7 years ago. And that all came after what I consider to have been my best career time. Now, granted, I was being paid more on some of those jobs than I might make this year. I don't really know. We'll see how the year goes. But I'm not wanting for anything this year. And I get to fucking do such cool shit, project after project. And by the way, those projects aren't always acting. And they aren't always even directing. I felt a bit of pressure after Barn Wedding to, like, stamp myself a director all of a sudden. And I do sometimes introduce myself as an actor-director, or depending on who I'm talking to, I'll just say I'm a director, because it's true. But am I also going to say martial artist, photographer, hobby car, you know what I mean? Like, how far down the scale do you have to go? So context of the person asking does matter, but saying director's legit. But the fear that I had to, like, stamp myself a director, it's like, nobody's waiting with bated breath for my next project. I'm actually beginning to create that next project, but it's not the only project. There's a project called teaching. There's a teaching acting too, by the way. There's a project called going to acting class, being a student, etc., etc., etc. Now, we're about to have TIFF start. And I'm about to see contemporary male friends of mine and colleagues up on the big screen, being feted, walking red carpets, and I can't pretend for one second that I'm not going to feel that, okay? It's just like when I see somebody driving by, maybe even in a car just like mine, and I might think, oh, I wish I had that. Because my spiritual condition often tells me that enough isn't. And if enough isn't, more won't be. But there's no two ways about it. Walking a red carpet as your movie's about to premiere is a phenomenal feeling, period.
For me.
Anyways, I'm sure there's some shy actors, much more talented than me, who hate that part of it. I don't. I like it. I like seeing the fans, because I am a fan. You know what I mean? Even when I'm on the red carpet, I'm looking over at the people on the red carpet with me going, oh my God, they're here. You know, I hope I never lose that. I really do. It's such a joy to still be working with people and going, Greg Smith. Greg Smith's one of the leads from Rookie Blue, but he's been acting since he was a kid. And, God, I don't even remember the name of the show. He was on with Emily Van Camp and Treat Williams. I used to watch this show all the time. It's a fantastic show. He was great in it. So he was directing me on Saving Hope the other day. And I was like, full disclosure, real fan of your work. And it was nice because, A, I got to stop sort of checking him out to see what he looks like in real life. Same with the Jason Priestley. But also, it can move us forward into like colleague territory, so I'm not stuck at fan. And by the way, it's nice to admit that I'm a fan of a younger guy, more successful in certain ways. And again, I have to say in certain ways because of what my dad's talking about. Taylor Swift. There was a lot of press about her malfunction, her stage malfunction, while she's doing this speech before the song Clean on her 1989 tour. By the way, my appreciation, love, enjoyment of Taylor Swift and my minute awareness of the details of her tour aren't ironic. I'm not doing it to give a little nudge and a wink. She's awesome. Plain and simple. Whether it's Trouble, whether it's Love Story, whether it's her Dear John tune's a little bit heavy-handed, but it's even still a lovely tune. And it's fun, her and John Mayer, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, she does this little 3-minute monologue on her tour about, I'm going to paraphrase it, you can't judge your insides by other people's outsides. Wish me luck on that. And if you figure out how to do it, tell me. But sometimes just a reminder. And this is something I want to get at. I've talked about a lot. If I know that, then I can choose it. So if I'm starting to go, oh, there's so-and-so, their film's premiering tonight. Oh man, they have the perfect life. I have no idea what kind of life they have. And I've probably just come from a great dinner with Emily. I have no idea. So am I feeling a bit off? Sure. And as I talked about the last podcast to Damon Runyon's question, I probably need to call somebody and help them. And maybe I'm calling somebody back who, you know, knows I don't drink and is wondering about that. Or maybe I'm calling someone back who needs help painting their apartment. And I go help them paint their apartment. You know, helping people takes many forms. And I'm pretty good at justifying the way I help. But usually it's face-to-face, or at least voice-to-voice, and usually it's fairly hands-on. You know, somebody needs help with something, and I do them a favor. And the reason it's called a favor is because I wouldn't otherwise be doing it. I.e. sacrifice them, you know, going out of my way. It's hard for me to do. I want to put a number figure on it, or I want to make it like, I just want to make there be a reason why me helping is too hard or something. And sometimes I don't help. Sometimes I gotta help myself. But I say all that because if I'm starting to look at somebody else as having a better life than me, it means I'm out of gratitude. And a way to get back in gratitude is to offer help to someone who needs it. Because if they need help, it's sort of a bit of a trick. They're probably having a shittier day than me. So now I'm realizing two things. One, oh, I might not have it so bad. I don't have to fucking move my apartment today. And you never know why the person has to move. Maybe they went through a breakup. Maybe they went through a divorce. Maybe they, I don't know. And two, I have something of value to offer in this moment. So it's a double positive, because instead of sitting around feeling sorry for myself, which, you know, could even be considered a minus one, I get the plus one of, I don't have the worst day in the world today, and then the plus one, i.e. plus two, of, wow, I am an esteemable person. Like, I've just done something worthy, and therefore I might be worth more than sitting around feeling sorry for myself. If you're sitting around feeling sorry for yourself a lot, I really recommend therapy, or maybe a level of honesty with friends that you're not willing to offer yet, but you'd be surprised. Because what do you got to lose? You know, if you think your friends think you're the funny, happy-go-lucky guy, but you're not, or you think your friends think you're the, like, rock, but you're not, then give up needing to be that, because they probably don't need it from you. And, hell, they're probably tired of it from you by now. And it's probably a relief when you call and go, I'm having trouble. I could use a hand. And again, like we just talked about, you're doing them a favor. It's that old monk idea that when you donate to the monk's cup, the monk's actually doing you the favor. They're giving you the ability to give. It's not the other way around where, well, even if it is, oh, I feel so great because I'm... Okay, morning, everybody. So I got cut off yesterday. Got a phone call, and then I had to go to my class. I'm actually talking to you on the exact same stretch of road. I'm driving myself out to work at Saving Hope, and then afterwards have a bunch of errands to run. So I don't even know what I was talking about yesterday. Whatever it was, wah, wah, wah. It's about as important as that. You know, that's one of those things to me where things seem so important at the time. And I don't mean that I think what I'm talking about in the podcast is so important. But yes, it is, because it's what's happening. So it is the most important thing in my life, by the way, as it should be. So, you know, basically, I have no control over tomorrow. And I can't do anything to change yesterday. So in the truest sense of the word, all I have is this moment. Period. It's all I got. I can't emanate out and make Emily do anything. I can't emanate out and get my job tomorrow. There's just now. What am I doing now? And by the way, as I talk about a lot, how am I with it? You know, the car is a place where I'll get a lot of emotion roiling up. And I know a lot of actors think, oh man, if only I could do my auditions like in the car. Because you're driving alone, the feelings are open. Even Louis C.K. talks about driving along and that Bruce Springsteen tune comes on and he gets so emotional. And I do think there's something to it. I think part of it is that you're alone. And there's all these distracted driving campaigns. There's this one particularly brilliant, like, 4-minute commercial. It's just shot so well and sets up so well. But, you know, the simplest glance at your phone can kill you because you need to see if someone liked your photo. And it's funny, it's almost like, well, it is an addiction. It's like an addiction where you know that next hit, you know, could kill you, but you do it anyways because in that moment, the need to be away from the pain of yourself is greater than the notion that you could die. Seriously, you're driving along. We all know that you could get killed by checking a text message, or at the very least, rear-end someone in front of you. Man, I've never seen so many rear-enders as in the last, like, year or two, now that everybody in the world has a phone with Instagram and Facebook on it. Because even 2 years ago, your average person might know, well, Instagram was just starting then, if at all. You know what I'm getting at is that there's more and more tendrils of need due to products that, you know, touch us with likes and with whatever. And I'm not slagging that off, you know. I don't love my own relationship with it always, but it's a fun thing. It's awesome, whatever. But you're not going to drive along playing a video game or you shouldn't. And so similarly, the, you know, checking those likes could kill us, but we're so afraid to drive alone, and I get it, because it's why I like my motorcycle rides. When I'm in that motorcycle helmet, I don't have a phone, I don't have a whatever. So what happens is, often, there's periods of my long drives that really suck. You know, and part of it is that I'm alone with myself in ways that I'm not generally alone with myself. And by the way, even if I've ever, which I've never, driven 160, 180, 200, never done it, but had I ever done it, I'll be honest with you, that's still not fast enough to remove me from myself. There's some guys who do that between traffic and video it. They're probably in such a reactive state that they aren't with themselves. But when you're going down a ribbon, a highway through Arizona, there's not a car behind you, a car in front of you, and your speedo touches 215 on your motorbike, I've never done it. Ew! But if that had happened, it's still like a pretty tame thing. You're still in your own body, head, whatever. And so that need to get out of it gets so great. So the idea of those little glance down distractions being a way to remove us from ourselves, it is like an addiction. I'm willing to die so that I don't feel something in this moment deeper than, oh, they like my photo. You know, right as I'm about to go, oh, I hate myself, or oh, I don't know about that relationship in, or and by the way, all this started with me talking about, we just have the moment. And it's amazing how often and how many things are designed to remove us from the moment. Anthony Robbins talks, you know, about the quickest change of state being substance abuse. I feel a way that isn't working for me, edgy, anxious from work, uncomfortable, grab a beer. You know, and I'm not even talking about like drunks. I'm talking about average person, grab a beer, chilling it out, change of state. And again, that's really what I'm talking about, is the need to change state from the moment. What's so bad about this moment? It's all perspective. Mac had this great ad, Mountain Equipment Co-op. For those of you in the States, this it's the same as REI. It's an outdoor equipment thing. And it just said, there's no bad weather, there's only bad gear. You know, as a motorcyclist, I agree with that. Like when I'm out and I've got the right rainproof, awesome, you know, my favorite way to kit up on the bike is my Bellstaff jacket, which is waxed. And then over top of that, my Gore-Tex, because the Gore-Tex isn't going to be perfect. And then whatever I'm wearing on the bottom, protective, whether it's a thick denim, and then the Gore-Tex over that. And then obviously Gore-Tex boots. My hands are going to get soaked no matter what I'm wearing, even if I've got Gore-Tex gloves. But it's going to happen fairly quickly. And that's kind of it. I'm good, man. I'm good down to like 5 degrees in that outfit. And then I need another layer going down to 0, maybe -2. And obviously I'm hoping it doesn't snow. Those are some of the best rides of my life. Truly, I'm not trying to be cool about it. Some of the best days at camp of my life were when thunderstorms would hit and we'd all get naked and run through the puddles while it was storming. Again, that was actually the right outfit in the woods, because you're not like, oh, my shirt's wet. You're just like, oh my God, I'm an animal in the water. Where that obviously works, there's no bad moments. There's just bad mental gear. You know, what's the fucking mental gear that makes me need to make tomorrow more important than now? Or yesterday more important than now? And lest you think I'm fucking preaching and not fucking, you know, I don't care about this stuff because I'm not subject to it. I care about it because I will give up today for tomorrow. Every fucking chance I get. And I don't like it. And I don't like when other people around me do it. I like it less when I do it, though. When people around me do it, and here's an interesting thing, I have compassion for it. and I can listen and be like, well, you know, what's going on for real? And yeah, how can I help? But when I do it to myself, I can be very punishing. And part of the punishing aspect isn't, oh, you're such an idiot, because we've talked about that I don't really do that anymore. The punishing aspect is the loop of it. It's that I just keep letting it happen. And, you know, I'm driving in a gray, rainy day right now. I'm on my way to work. That's, you know, always a good thing. Today, again, does it matter that I have fun stuff on today? Given that that stuff's not happening right now, and all of it could get canceled. You know, I'm a little frustrated too, by the way, today. You know, my acting classes, they are so fucking hard to keep filled. Like, I have these abs, like, when I'm not teaching class, I'll have 30 people write me and go, oh my God, are you doing class right now? And I'm not exaggerating, by 30 people, and I fill the class with 12 people. And then I'll be like, no, I'm shooting stuff for the summer, you know, so I'll start again in the fall. And then I'll set up the class in the fall, and I'll get the, like, you know, 10 of those people be like, oh, damn, bad timing, I'm working on something, or I took another class or whatever. But I'm still 20 people, and invariably people just start canceling leading up, and then I'm still hustling, and it's so annoying because I've basically got, like, more than 30 people sort of available who love the class and want to take it, but then I have to hustle like up to the day of class just to keep a full class of talented actors. It's, I mean, again, I'm sure people listening can relate. The doing of the thing isn't the issue. It's the creating the platform or whatever to be able to do it. Teaching and teaching well is not the issue. Hustling the class so that there's a class to teach is. And obviously, you know, I don't do myself any favors with having acting, music, photography. I mean, God, these are three of the toughest businesses, at the very least, in terms of, do you know you get to do it tomorrow? We all know there's hyper-successful actors and photographers and musicians, but when you're, you know, even doing nicely, it's still getting to do the work is a bigger job than doing the work. So I'll say that being on the way to studio right now is definitely a way to feel better than other days. Even though, again, I had another actor be like, oh, I've got commitments on those Sundays, I can't make it now. Commitment's an interesting word to me, you know. Commitment is something that I think has lost real value, and I don't want to be one of these old fucking battle axes that's like things have changed. Maybe it's actually that I have turned a corner where I try and stay with my commitments. Not always, by the way, but better than I ever was. And that's one of those things where the better I get at keeping commitments, the more I realize people are bad at keeping commitments. And it's better it's better to not be the limiting agent in anything for one's peace. You know, I had an ex-girlfriend, and she's like, why do I always have to be the brakes? Because every night I wanted to keep going, and then she'd be like, maybe we should go home, it's 4 a.m., or maybe we shouldn't do more drugs, or maybe we should not drink so much more. And I'd be like, well, fuck, man. You know, you're killing my buzz, man. That was a shitty situation for her. You know, she was the limiting reagent there. And if you're the one who's on time, in a world of people who don't seem to give a shit about being on time, because you can just text and say, on my way. I've said this before. Hey, people, on my way just means I'm fucking late. It doesn't mean you've somehow reconformed the structure of the committed conversation a week earlier through a space-time, you know, loophole where on my way lets you go back in time and make it 9:15, not 9.
Says the guy who's in traffic right now, hoping to make it to set for 9. Yeah, that's one where I just, again, like, I think a lot of that has to do with FOMO. FOMO. Fear of missing out. Instead of just going, I got this thing at 9. Okay, let's not talk about the morning. The morning's tough. Mornings are hot. I don't like getting up in the morning. Can I just snooze a little more? I fucking love snoozing. So, we're not talking about mornings. Usually mornings are about snoozing, not about FOMO. At any time after the morning, you're supposed to meet someone, but what you try and do is cram in a little bit of extra Facebook time or Instagram time or a conversation with someone because you're worried that you haven't said enough to nail down how great you and them are friends or how you guys are going to meet at that party, you know? And it's like, no, you were supposed to leave 5 minutes ago. And I really do think fear of missing out gets more and more rampant with social networking. And it comes down to this thing that I talked about yesterday, i.e. 20 minutes ago, is the Taylor Swift speeches. You're judging your insides by someone else's outsides, and it looks like they are glamorous on Facebook or they are glamorous on Insta. And so I must be missing out on something if they're that glamorous and I'm not. You know? Just try living with a girl who's got 3 parties today and doesn't have the right outfits for any of them. So this girl's going to the 3 hottest parties in town tonight, but it's actually work. And by the way, I'm not slagging off Emily. It's actually work for her to put together the appropriate, and she's not trying to be the most whatever anything. She's just trying to have the right outfits for what those events require, and it's hard. You know, I watch her do it, and I'm like, I'm just going jacket, t-shirt, jeans for the ones I'm going to, because that's right for me, you know? And it's not a male-female thing, although it kind of is. You know, there is an expectation, but there's also a baseline look. That involves a lot more outfits than I have to have in my closet. My point is this. Anybody who sees those Instagram photos, that's going to feel like just glam. And by the way, sure, these parties are going to be great. I'm only going to the one of them, and then she's going to other 2 hot gigs for TIFF. But I'm just saying that a lot of work and a lot of not fun stuff, much like me on the show here, like, I've talked about this, and I mean, look, Instagram has sort of, like, given us an inside track on the visual of even studios and stuff, but, you know, this isn't glamorous what I'm going to do. It's fucking awesome. But being on TV and blah, 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 it's pretty good. You know, it's such a small component of what we're talking about here. Okay, I've rambled enough. I think I'll probably do another 5 or 10 minutes later. I'll let you know how the shooting day goes, and then I'll post this podcast. Talk to you guys in a sec. Hey, everybody, welcome to Chatting Between Takes. I think I have to turn that music down. So, I'm just going to do a little follow-up on that shooting day, and then I'm just going to restart another podcast. Shooting day was fine. It was very simple. It was literally me giving a girl a massage in a hall for a while. That was my shooting day. So, in fact, that was kind of glamorous. Anyways, it's like days later. I just wanted to pick up because I hate, you know, dead-end podcasts. Feels very unfinished. So, this one's finished, and we're going to jump into another one. It's 6:40 in the morning.